Hey everybody, my name is Barbara and we've got it going on for you today. Another candidate for governor is here to talk with you directly about himself and his candidacy. County Commissioner Steve Bradshaw is our guest today. You know, the primary election is coming up fast. It's coming in May, and this primary will determine who will be on the November ballot. So we have talked to other hopefuls declaring as Republicans, Ammon Bundy, Mayor Shelby Ronstadt, and Lieutenant Governor Janice McGeehan. So today, Steve Bradshaw, keep it right here. Every Tuesday, we endeavor to keep you informed and prepared. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
When it comes to a P1FCU personal signature loan, we're all about understanding what makes you, well, you. We can help you finance your education, that big move, or even your next big adventure. You have your reason. We have your loan. Get started today at p1fcu.org/you. P1FCU, a Pacific Northwest original since 1938. All loans are subject to P1FCU membership, credit approval, and other underwriting criteria.
Oh, I love family road trips. The wind in my ears.
Good dog.
Treats in my mouth. And peace of mind, knowing we went to Les Schwab for our tires, brakes, and alignment. If we had gone to one of those cheap tire stores that don't offer those services, I'd be a doggone wreck. Like Les Schwab, my family's safety is my first priority. Well, that and treats, obviously.
Swing by or book online. Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
So, how's your research going?
Surprising! After I figured out the top-rated TVs in our price range, I went shopping for deals.
And who's the best?
It wasn't the internet, and it wasn't the warehouse club.
But?
It was video only. They had better deals on the Samsung, LG, and the Sony TVs that got the highest scores.
Better than online and at the club?
I know! Video only beat them all. And now we can afford an even better model for the same price. My research really paid off.
If we buy it video only.
Exactly. Otherwise, we'll be sorry.
At Video Only, you won't find huge stores with refrigerators or dishwashers, but you will find the best deals on the best TVs, soundbars, and home theater systems. Shop around, but then make sure you visit Video Only, because if you don't,
you'll be sorry.
On Division North of Francis, Video Only.
All right, crew, let's get her dug.
Honey, you want to give me a hand? I'm planting that tree, remember?
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. You must call 811 at least 2 to 3 business days before any digging project, so you can avoid hitting our essential buried utilities. This includes natural gas and petroleum pipelines, electric, communication cables, and water and sewer lines. So before you do this, or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811. Brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
KBFI, KSPT, North Idaho's radio.
All right, everyone, welcome back in. Say hello and welcome to our guest today, Steve Bradshaw, County Commissioner, candidate for governor. Steve, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for asking me to be here.
You are more than welcome. You know, I think the first question that comes to mind when people think about County Commissioner of Bonner County, Governor of Idaho, they think that's a big jump. That's a big political jump. How do you respond to people say, don't you need something in between?
I usually tell them I wish that all the legislators, all the way up to the governor, would be a county commissioner at least once. Then they'd have a clue as to how local government actually operates. Far as I know, I'm the only candidate that has operated in all three branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial. And as a county commissioner, you are quasi-judicial, so you operate in all three. And so that kind of gives me one up on one candidate, two up on all the rest of them.
What was the judicial capacity that you served in? I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with that.
You look at different things that come before the county, and you make a judge decision on them. And
I guess what I'm thinking of right now, having you said that, not with you, but years ago, a property tax appeal that I made that went before the County Board of Supervisors, and they adjudicated it, thank you very much, in my favor. And so, yes, I see how that was a judgment call that they had to make.
Right. That is part of the judicial part of it.
All right. So let's take a look at some of the policies and positions that you can point to as county commissioner that tells us about your leadership.
5 months after sworn in, I drafted and passed a resolution making Bonner County a Second Amendment sanctuary county.
You were in favor of making Bonner County a sanctuary county?
I drafted the resolution.
For illegal immigrants, sanctuary for arms?
Second Amendment.
Second Amendment sanctuary, thank you. Because people hear sanctuary cities and counties,
right,
and they're thinking something
else. They're thinking one way, and we took it the other way.
Right, so explain again what that Second Amendment sanctuary, what does it actually do for Bonner County?
It makes a statement that the prosecutor was in favor of it, the sheriff was fully on board with it, that we would not pass, adopt, or follow anything that was contrary to the Second Amendment of the Constitution.
Would this include something if the federal government came down with something like, we are going to take away X kind of gun or ammunition or whatever, that would empower our, what you passed would empower our sheriff to go against that?
Right. He has the opportunity to not enforce that.
Okay. What else would you point to that would be your leadership skills?
I have always been self-employed. I've had people working for me, sometimes just one person, all the way up to 27 employees at one time. So I've always been in that end of it, not only as the worker, but as the manager and business owner too. And so I know about budget. The three commissioners we have right now, we kept taxes flat for 3 years, increased services and customer service, cut the budget by 20%. And so there's always ways to make things more efficient, and we've kind of overcome the good old boy system where that's the way we've always done it, which if you've always done it right, that's good. But if you haven't always done it right and efficient, then you do need to fix it.
Yeah.
And so
things change. We're in a world of change for sure.
Business changes from day to day. And now with technology, you know, the last 30, 40 years, it changes so fast. It's like, well, what worked yesterday ain't even working today. You know, so it's something you really got to watch. And if you don't change with it, it just rolls over the top of you and you lay there wondering what happened.
One of the changes that county commissioners have done is splitting planning and zoning. So instead of one commission, it'll be two. A lot of people see that two ways. They say that's more complicated, that's just more government, that's just more people, that's more staff to minister and help and support these commissions, and it's too much of a fast track to get to too much density. How do you respond to people that are really a little bit concerned about that split?
Well, first of all, those commissions are volunteers.
Correct.
And the Planning and Zoning Commission was taken on both the zoning and working on the comp plan, correcting stuff that there was contradictory language, and plus it was, and somebody said you're rushing into it, and it's like, no, the last major change was 1994, so this is not something that got rushed into. This is something that got put off forever. And because of so much growth in the county, it's become overwhelming for it to operate as one commission and actually get anything done, because now you're overloading the commission with so much stuff they have to look at that it's almost a full-time job. So if you separate the zoning and work on the comp plan with one commission and then the building with the other, then, or the planning with the other, then it lightens the load on both sides, and they're able to actually get things done more efficiently and hopefully a lot faster than they've been operating.
You know, I need to say that in, I don't know that this would surprise you at all, but in all of my conversations with city council candidates for Sandpoint City Council, I interviewed everyone. And so far with governor's candidates, and just in general conversations on that LOT, local option tax that the city put forward that was defeated, people almost to a person thought that planning and more density and rearranging things was ahead of infrastructure, that there needed to be better attention to streets and wastewater and our water needs before we allow so many of these multiple-use, multiple-family buildings. How do you respond to that concern?
Growth is inevitable. But managed growth is good. If it's not managed and you don't prepare for it, then you end up in a mess. I mean, it's just a basket case mess, because now you've overwhelmed yourself and you're way behind the ball on infrastructure. So that's something that's constantly got to be looked at. Where's the biggest impact going to be? Where do we need to concentrate the most effort to prepare for this? And so there's a lot of dynamics that work into it, especially in the city, because they have sewer, water, those issues, where the county doesn't have the sewer and water issue.
Right. Do you think, therefore, that to the extent the county can do their area of jurisdiction, that you have considered infrastructure ahead of allowing growth?
We were making a little headway on that, and then last year's legislation did not really do the counties any favor.
How so?
We were able to keep taxes flat because of new growth, new construction coming on the tax rolls. We're covering inflationary rate. Therefore, we didn't have to raise the taxes to 3% every year to cover inflation. New construction was covering it. This last year, they decided that you could only tax the new construction at 60%, which violates state law, because state statute dictates that we treat you the same as we treat the person next door to you. But that's not the case if the person next door to you bought the empty lot and is building a new house, because now he's only paying 60% that first year, where you're paying full.
So you're
picking up 40% of his load.
So did you disobey that legislation or challenge it in court?
No, we have to
push back.
We push back, but I mean, legislation passed it. The governor signed it.
We don't have
the authority to override it.
Did our representatives, Heather Scott, Jim Woodward at the center?
I'm not sure who all voted for it.
They voted. Okay, and, I'll find out.
And I'm, it's unfortunately we have some excellent legislators, but we don't have but less than one handful, counting your fingers, that have ever been a county commissioner. So I think sometimes they don't truly grasp local government and what's all involved in it. And then another way they hurt the county was forever since they've had homeowners exemption. You had a deadline, I think June 1st, maybe July 1st, but midterm, you had to have your homeowner's exemption filed by then.
I think it's like in the spring now.
Right.
Now, like April.
Now it's any time.
Oh.
Well, they changed that after we set the budget October 1st, which we're locked in to what we can tax. I mean, that's your budget for the year. You're locked in. Now you have all these new houses and stuff that are coming on the tax rolls, people buying properties, new homeowners, filing for their homeowner's exemption after October 1st. Our budget has already been set.
So not only are
they effective immediately, so we had to cancel those taxes that we had budgeted for, and it cost us almost $500,000 in tax revenue.
So not only are they paying 60%, they being new homeowners, I guess we'll say, and they can file any time for an exemption and they muck up the budget.
Immediately.
So as governor, what I'm hearing you say, the between the lines story is that as governor, with that knowledge, you would help guide the legislature to not make those kinds of mistakes.
I would definitely suggest them. Look at these things before you go too far into them.
Can county commissioners go before the legislature prior to a bill being passed and testify in objection?
I'm not sure that they allow us to do that. We can do it on paper, we can do it on the phone, we can do it by email, but I'm not sure that they'll let us actually come before the legislative board.
Yeah.
And state our case.
Well, they let people come. It's like an open, not open mic, but a registered microphone. I want to change the topic to this supposed revenue that we have at the state level, $1.9 billion in state funds and or ARPA funds that are really federal funds, and $1 billion in, another billion, my eyes are not finding the other billion, but we have this revenue, this quote-unquote excessive revenue in Boise that they, of course, want to spend, give us back a little bit. What do you think about that revenue or that those excess funds, and how would you spend them, or how would you lead the state in dealing with these funds? That's a big question, but take a hack at it. We're going to have a commercial break, but go ahead, get started on it.
Now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's easy. I'd dump it into our highways and infrastructure and places that it's needed instead of trying to buy votes just prior to an election.
Would you say buying votes is giving more money and more staff to our educational system and our educational people?
I don't think that would be buying votes. Sometimes I question their motives on a lot of things. And so I'm not going to accuse anybody without any hard evidence.
Okay.
But if you're not overtaxing, then you don't have a bulk of revenue.
Yeah. A part of that money comes from the federal government, the American Rescue Plan Act. And I know as county commissioners, you have been dealing with people that are opposed to using that money and receiving it because it's got strings attached. And it's not even real money anyway, because the federal government, it's just a part of the debt that you and I and our kids are going to be responsible for. So how do you decipher what to do with the ARPA money?
There's no doubt that every city and county and state could use it. And there's places that definitely are behind the ball, like City of Sandpoint could certainly use it on their infrastructure, their sewer and their water. However, all federal money comes with a string, They've all got guidelines and rules. And so if you take it for a bridge, that money has to be spent on the bridge according to the outlines they put out. That makes sure that you don't fix the bridge and then there's money left over. You used it over here on a street. That's not allowed. It has to be bridge. So it's very specific as to where it goes. The ARPA money had some questionable language in it that was brought to my attention. And so I talked to a couple of different attorneys. I said, is it just me or is this a problem? And they both said, no, this could actually definitely be a problem. It's very questionable. It's not standard language in federal contracts. And what it, my perception and their perception was, once you spend the money, they have the ability to pass an executive order onto that contract, and it could be anything from a mask mandate, vax mandate, to everybody's got to drive a Ford or a Chevy, your kid has to be born on Wednesday, whatever they want to add. It's a wide open spot for them to throw anything in there they choose to throw in, and then if you don't conform to it, you have to pay all the money back. The amount of money is so big that once these cities and counties or states spend the money, they don't have it in revenue to pay that bill back, which immediately becomes a federal debt. And if you go to paragraph 14 in the ARPA rules, 14 and 15, it becomes an immediate debt payable immediately. And the Treasury Department, I want to try to get this as close to accurate as I can, is authorized to use whatever means available to it to collect that debt, which you and I know, if the IRS decides to collect a debt from you, their limitations are just short of hanging you in the front yard.
Right. They can take everything.
They can do whatever they want.
Including your first grandchild. All right, we're up against a break. We're going to take that break right now. We'll be right back, everybody. Keep it right here.
Hi, this is Lauren with Knutson Chevrolet. Don't miss our winter sales event going on all month, where you can get a new Chevy Blazer 2LT all-wheel drive for only $32,997 and a 2021 Chevy Camaro for $31,67, one of each to choose from. We also have over 150 new Chevy Silverado Double Cab 4x4s and Chevy Silverado Crew Cab LT 4x4s to choose from during the Knutson Winter Sales Event. Knutson Chevrolet is your family-owned, family-operated dealership since 1939 that puts customer service above all else. Visit Knutson.com to schedule your at-home test drive and even purchase your next vehicle online using ShopClick Drive. Find new roads at Knutson Chevrolet. Minutes west of Coeur d'Alene, just a short drive east of Spokane at 1900 East Polston Avenue, Post Falls. Knutson Chevrolet, hard to say, easy to save.
They were our brothers, our sisters, sons and daughters. They were our parents, family, our neighbors and our friends. How can we express the gratitude that we all owe the thousands and thousands of American veterans who have sacrificed so much for our country's freedom? It was they who stepped forward from the time this country was created to fight for everything we know about liberty and freedom. And although we celebrate their victories and console them for their losses by creating monuments and honoring them in parades, the truth is we can never do enough for the freedom they've given us. Perhaps the most important thing we can do is reach out to those veterans closest to us and simply tell them, thank you. Thank you for all you've done for freedom. All of us at Shiloh Inns would like to take this opportunity to recognize the many men and women who have served and continue to serve our country so that we will always be free. Thank you, veterans, from everybody at Shiloh Inns.
Mom! I don't know if your family is like ours, but you never know when a minor emergency or illness is going to happen. And when it does, you want the expert care you need when you need it. That's why we go to Northwest Urgent Care. Their state-of-the-art facility is efficient and streamlined, ready for just about anything. So for all your family's breaks and bruises, rashes and scratches, brawls and falls, fevers and flus, poisons and pains, or even sprains and strains, go see the caring providers and staff at Northwest Urgent Care. They work hard to get you in and out quickly, cost less than an ER visit, and are accepted by almost all insurance plans. Oh no, here we go again.
Northwest Urgent Care, physician-owned and operated, with two convenient locations, on the corner of Mullen and Syringa in Post Falls, next to Northwest Specialty Hospital, and on the corner of Highway 95 and Dalton in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Northwest Urgent Care is open 7 days a week. No appointment necessary.
North Idaho's Radio, KSPT and KBFI.
Everybody, welcome back in. We are talking today with Steve Bradshaw. He is Bonner County County Commissioner. He is a candidate for governor, and he has a lot of thoughts and ideas that he's sharing with you today. So you can, if you haven't had an opportunity to hear Commissioner Bradshaw speak at one of the meetings, or maybe at a Grange, or, you know, different events around town, this is your opportunity to get to know him. So when we went on our break, we were talking about the $1.9 billion that Idaho has in like supposedly extra money and what to do with it. One of the areas that Governor Little has proposed is tax relief. So I'd like to know, first of all, do you agree or disagree that we should stop sales tax on groceries?
Absolutely.
Okay. So without hesitation.
Without hesitation. The three most essential things to life existing is air, water, and food. And our government is going to tax that.
Yeah. And my dog.
Correct.
So, all right. So a more difficult question, and this is from talking with candidate Ammon Bundy. You may know or may not know that he is proposing that property taxes be completely eliminated in Idaho, and that instead there be what is simply expressed as a point of sale property tax. At the time you buy a piece of property, land, house, whatever, you pay a point of sale. It's pretty high. It's a one-time only tax. Everybody else, somehow we get grandfathered in. I don't know how that works. Are you familiar with this, and do you agree or disagree with the idea?
I've heard of it. You know, it all sounds great, and every property owner would say, yeah, sign me up, except for the fact that now how do you support all the services that are needed? Your roads, your highways.
Well, as you may expect, he has an answer for that. I mean, he says he's done the math. So I'm just wondering, so you have not seen, or you have looked at it and don't think the math is there?
It is not realistic.
Okay.
If you put a really high sales tax on a piece of property, okay, you paid the sales tax when you bought it.
Pretty high. He was talking $30,000, $40,000, $50,000.
Yeah. That's not going to carry you in perpetuity. Once you've spent that money, where's your next infrastructure dollar come from?
All right.
It's not realistic. It sounds good.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for that. Another area that has been discussed with all the governor's candidates is this idea of ballot integrity and election integrity. And it's just very interesting, the ideas that are coalescing a little bit. What are your thoughts on ballot integrity, election integrity? In Idaho, I think it's very high, but that doesn't mean we're immune.
In Idaho, it's very high. I can say with full confidence, in Bonner County, it was extremely high.
Absolutely. You know, Michael Rosedale will be my guest next week. He's great.
They watch, look, cross every T, dot every I, two times, three times. But there is some questionable things that had taken place that I found out once I entered this race. And there was a substantial amount of money came to Idaho, over $500,000, that went to several counties to the elections office. Now, the elections office gets funds from different places, but these were companies that were owned by Google or Facebook. one of the two, but both. And and at one of the forums I was at, one of the candidates for Secretary of State brought that up, and one of the other candidates said, yeah, but those election offices that took it did not know it was coming from Facebook. And I looked at him, I said, well, what difference does it matter where it came from? What are they doing taking it?
What are they doing with it?
There you go.
Taking it.
Now, there's a question.
Was there an answer there that
you know,
we got?
I got no answer.
One of the ideas that's been presented that I believe is being done in Arizona, and that is, you know how our passports, you pass them under that light at the airport, and there's like, it cannot be duplicated. It's like
right.
A little secret code in there that only shows up in the light. That the estimate has been, I can't believe it would be this inexpensive, $1 million. I mean, I think $5 million would be reasonable to have those kind of ballots in Idaho. Have you heard about that idea? What do you think?
I think of a valid state-issued ID should be required to vote. Hands down, no ifs, ands, or buts.
Photo ID.
Right. And you can get that. You either get your driver's license or you have a state-issued identification card. It looks like a driver's license, but it's just a state-certified ID card.
Right.
And so those are in existence. They've been in existence for years and years. It's not a big deal. There's many states that's just like Idaho that requires that photo ID. And then on your mail-in ballots, there's always a better way to do that. And the way we have right now is pretty accurate. You sign your application for an absentee. They scan your autograph. They mail you your absentee ballot. You fill it out, you stick it in your envelope, you sign the back of that envelope, and you mail it back. When that envelope comes to Mike Rosedale's office, they scan your autograph on the back of that envelope. The computer compares it to the one on your application. If there's a discrepancy and they don't look alike, they will call you, email you, whatever, but they will try to contact you. In the event they are not able to contact you and verify that, it goes in the trash and is never opened.
You know, not only that, if you try to vote in person, they already know. They have an absentee
right.
ballot from you, so you
can't vote twice.
You cannot vote twice, and you can't. You have forever done your one absentee ballot. You can't vote twice somehow absentee to make a Xerox copy or
right.
do something fancy with your 3D printer. You voted and that's it. I just heard Michael Rosedale stand up at his desk because he gets so concerned when people mix a mail-in ballot with an absentee ballot.
Right.
It is true we mail the absentee, but the whole procedure is 100% different than like in Pennsylvania, where they just mail out a bunch of ballots to whether you
yeah,
ask for it or not,
a big
mail it back in.
Opportunity for fraud there.
I would say so.
And in Bonner County, there was very, very few that the signature did not match.
Right.
And the ones that they had, they were able to verify all of them but one.
Yeah.
And that one didn't have a cell phone number, and he leaves in the wintertime, in the fall. So he was not able to be contacted until you had one that could not be verified.
All right.
So Bonner County had a very, very tight and secure election.
Yeah, we run Michael Rosedale, who will be on the radio next week with me, and Clarissa Coster, who is the manager of elections at Bonner County. She'll be here, too. They run a very tight ship.
Very
just
tight
all
ship.
Kinds of kudos to them. So this special watermarked ballot, you don't think is necessary to spend the money on that? If we had photo ID...
help prevent counterfeits.
Yeah.
I can see where that would work to, because it makes it much more difficult and expensive to counterfeit.
Exactly. And it doesn't seem to be that expensive to get that, because you're buying paper. These ballots are printed someplace. I don't care what they are. Someplace they're printing them. And so to print them on that kind of paper that can't be replicated at least easily makes sense to me. Another area, oh, we're up against another break. I can't believe these breaks, they just keep coming. They just keep coming too fast. But we're going to go do a little bit of business and stick around, everybody. We've got some good questions coming your way.
The Professional Bull Riders Pendleton Whiskey Velocity Tour returns for an all-new 2022 season. Watch as riders from around the country face the world's most ferocious bulls. Join us for the Professional Bull Riders Pendleton Whiskey Velocity Tour Spokane Classic, January 22nd at the Spokane Arena. Tickets start at $15. Get yours today at pbr.com or ticketswest.com. Get them while you can and find out what it means to be cowboy.
Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet has added ReadyWise Survival and Emergency Foods to their line of food and storage supplies. They also feature preparedness and homesteading books and supplies, plus ammo and knives. And, of course, Grunberg Sloss carries U.S. and world coins, gold and silver, bullion, jewelry, and more. Open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5, located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Grunberg Sloss Collector's Cabinet.
Another great year has come and gone here at the Ponderay Winery, and as we wish a happy new year to all, we want to invite everyone to come and celebrate with a pizza and a tasty bottle of rosé, January's Wine of the Month. Our tasting room is also a great place to meet up with friends after a nice day on the mountain. We have music every Friday and Saturday evening, along with January's featured artwork produced by Betty Billups. We're open Tuesday through Saturday, 12 to 8, so come see us at 301 Cedar in downtown Sandpoint, where relaxing and having a good time are strongly encouraged. The Ponderay Winery, a Sandpoint institution since 1995.
Are you curious about who offers the best deals on top-rated Samsung, LG, and Sony TVs? The answer is surprising. It's not online. And it's not the warehouse clubs. The best deals on top-rated TVs are at Video Only. Don't believe it? Then check out the trade-in deals at Video Only. How about $500 for your old TV? Try doing that online. Before you buy that new TV, drop into Video Only. If you don't, you'll be sorry.
ADHD. It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer, maybe yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated and it can last a lifetime. Living with a condition can sometimes be a challenge. It may take years to accept a formal diagnosis, and it's not always easy to find the right treatment plan. Did you know that up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental health condition that also requires a comprehensive approach to treatment? ADHD guidelines were recently updated to reflect the need to screen for associated disorders. Be sure to talk with your child's doctor about proper screening and visit moretoadhd.com for additional information. That's moretoadhd.com. This message has been brought to you in partnership with ADA, ACO, and CHAD.
KBFI 1450, KSPT 1400, and 97.1 FM.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for being with us today. I appreciate your tuning in and listening at 1400 AM, 1450 AM, 97.1 FM, and online at northidahoradio.com. I love it. If you want to learn more about the candidate for governor, County Commissioner Steve Bradshaw, that I'm talking with today, you can hear all of his policies and opinions and what he thinks at stevebradshawforgovernor.com. You can check it out and get a lot more information than we're going to get to today. So again, Steve Bradshaw, I appreciate your being on the program. One of my questions, Sheriff Wheeler recently spoke to the Rotary Club and just was talking about the drug issues in all of Idaho, Bonner County certainly, and that this drug train is coming across our southern border, and it's this open border that we've got is just bringing in drugs. I'm pretty sure you agree, or well, let me ask, do you agree with his analysis? But as governor, what can you do about it?
Well, it is a major problem nationwide. And the reason the problem doesn't get addressed as heavy as it should is because the amount of money that's involved in it. And the higher up the food chain you go, the deeper the corruption gets. And so there's a certain amount of danger if you're in the higher end of that food chain. If you speak out against it or go against it hard, there's a risk that comes with that. Most do not have the backbone to take that risk. They back down. They do a little bit to make it look like you're doing something. But if you're going to correct it, then you're going to have governors and presidents, senators, congressmen that will stand up, take the risk, and go, not in our country, and certainly not in our state.
Right, and they need to seal up the border. I know as governor you can't do that, but you could be a voice in a lobby to get that border closed down. I just don't understand why, I'll just say Idaho elected officials, are not on the border today screaming. I mean, literally, physically on the border yelling. I don't understand how this has been allowed to go on and on. It surprises me, Steve.
Right. For me, illegal is not a sick bird. It is illegal. It's against the law. It's against the rule of law. It's against the principles of the foundation of this nation. If it is illegal, it should be prosecuted and dealt with. When you have a judicial system that will not address it, you have a major problem.
Yeah.
The drug problem, Singapore was drug capital hub of the world for years. Singapore finally got some officials in there that took a stand. And if you were driving your car and you got pulled over and they suspected you were under the influence, you would be subjected to a test. If you tested positive for substance, it was automatic 9 months in rehab. From that stop, no pass, go, no collect $200. You went straight into rehab for 9 months. In less than a year, the drug market collapsed.
Yes.
They passed a law that if you were caught with enough substance to be deemed as a dealer or a supplier, it was a death penalty.
Yeah.
The risk was too high for the sellers. Their customer base disappeared because they were all in rehab, and they corrected their problem. Their solutions to these problems, and they're only hard solutions to the ones that are doing it.
Yeah.
It's not hard on the taxpayer and the law-abiding citizen. So legislation can fix these problems, but you need men and women of valor and backbone that will stand up and say, no, we're not allowing this in our state and in our country.
To stand up against the criminal or the illegal, that which is wrong, and not against people over here that are law-abiding citizens, I think is one thing. Let me change again to get this one in. And this is under the heading of everyone likes to talk positively, as well they should, about education. And typically they're talking public education, but I am interested. There's been a movement at different times in different areas that parents get in control of a part of the dollar that is spent on their child's education. And it's like a voucher. There are other systems without using a voucher, but it lets the parent decide if it's going to be private education or faith-based or some kind of alternative or even homeschooling and public schooling, all eligible. How do you feel about that? And is that doable in Idaho?
Absolutely, it's doable. At no time is the school board or teachers the parents of your kids. They have no right or authority to act as parents for your kids. You are the parent of your child. You get to decide what they subject to. The money should follow the kid.
You know, it's interesting to me that one of the arguments, I did a program recently about homeschooling, and we only talked about homeschooling, but everybody saw that as somehow coming against public education. It was very interesting to me. And the only thing that came up was, would you want to enroll your child also in sports in public if you're homeschooling? And this one parent said, no, I wouldn't be interested in that. But in no way was it saying that sports or organized sports was a bad thing. That was just a parental, as you said, a parent's choice. But it's interesting to me that people worry about how the money is being spent for homeschooling and seem to be pretty laissez-faire about how it's being spent in other areas of education. So you would have to come against that. How, as governor, can you become a lobby for that?
I would support the money following the kid, because most of the homeschool kids that I've encountered are actually far and above our local school kids on what they actually know and are able to do. And my question is, why is that? With the money that's going into our public school systems, why are homeschooled kids outperforming our graduates?
Some homeschool kids, some graduates. It's right. Not 100% one or
right.
the other. And
right.
I know
because
that you
everybody,
I know you know that.
Everybody operates on different levels.
Right, there are different.
It's been since the history of school. You saw it when you went through school. I saw it when I went through school. You got D students, you got C students, you got B students, you got A students. You got students that struggle. It's hard work for them to be a D passing student.
Yep.
Others, it gets easier. A students from the cheap seats, you go, that kid makes A and he probably while he's sleeping. But he's obviously doing the work.
Right.
And he has a comprehension level that's above. And so everybody operates on different levels and different speeds. And so everybody is capable of accomplishing a lot more than they think they are. And sometimes public schools, because of the overload that they're dealing with, they're not able to focus in on that kid that they see with special talents and push him forward and then put the effort into the one that's struggling and get him up to speed and convince him you can do this. And so it takes a lot of time and effort, and the public school teacher, more times than not, does not have the time to put into that.
Right. They take all kids. They come in at all different levels.
They get the whole basket.
They get the whole basket. Homeschooling can.
And my hat's off to the teachers. They got their hands full.
Oh, totally. Yeah, completely. But it seems to me it may be of benefit to all of the educational avenues to let the parents make choices. Whatever kind of schooling they want would take some of the pressure, I believe, off of public or off of faith-based or private schooling. I did a really interesting interview with our local Waldorf folks, and did you know, I didn't know this, Steve, their teachers follow that class, if they can, all the way through. First grade, second grade, third grade, it's the same teacher, and they all go together, they all learn and go through that together, and I'm just like, that is amazing. Well, listen, we are out of time. I've so enjoyed talking with you. Again, if you want more information on Steve Bradshaw, stevebradshawforgovernor.com gets you to a lot more information. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, everybody. Come on back next week. I get to talk to County Clerk Michael Rosedale with all the current up-to-date information for 2022 elections, registrations, absentee ballots, etc. Until then, this is Barbara saying, take care and may God bless you.